Hello everyone, my name is Zach. I'm a video producer here at BernieCast. You might not know me because I do mostly behind the scenes work. I've been on this project since the third episode, and I would like to extend my apologies before we begin this episode to the BernieCast community. This is from Ryan and I both. We've just been super swamped with lots of projects, and we know that we missed two dates to get the podcast out to everyone, and so I'd just like to apologize for that and say that we are getting back on track, and we should be able to get those podcasts out on time from here on out. And thank you for sticking with us, and we hope you enjoy this episode. Thank you. Burn, 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 burn. Bernie Sanders, he's number one, the president for everyone, every race and gender and orientation.
Hello and welcome to this episode of BernieCast. Today I'm with producer Zach, and he's going to be hanging out with me this episode. We took a week off to work on another project. It's our artificial intelligence project, Mycroft.ai. So if you're a techie, go ahead and check that out. But we're going to get back to Bernie. So let's just take a moment to talk about climate change. This comes on, I guess this came a little bit before Obama's, an announcement of his initiative, in regards to the environment and climate change. Is definitely an issue that in the U.S. hasn't really caught steam, but around the world, it's pretty commonly accepted.
Yeah. In fact, most places on the planet just widely accept it, regardless. In the U.S., it has been the only place that it's really been questioned and
disputed.
Yeah, and the dispute started out over, you know, is there climate change or not? And then the dispute changed from that to, is it man-made climate change? And really, it doesn't matter whether climate change is man-made or not, which it is, but it's how we combat it. And an interesting thing is that I think it's the UN, but they changed their language. Initially, they said, you know, how do we prevent global warming? And recently, within the past couple of years, they changed the language from how do we prevent global warming to how do we deal with global warming? Because it's no longer an issue of we need to stop this from happening or we need to prevent this from happening. It's definitely become an issue of it is happening and this is how it's affecting us. And, you know, we can see this right now. If you watched Obama's video recently, you know, there are videos of, you know, you can watch, you know, the carbon emissions change over the years. You can watch things get worse, and things are getting worse. And so it's happening, and it's a thing, and it's affecting us. And it's not affecting the United States quite as bad, but in some places are being affected incredibly drastically, and it's hurting people's way of life. And so, you know, this is something that is very, very serious, and it's something that needs to be talked about, and something needs to be done about it, and there needs to be change.
Recently, a state employee down in Florida got in trouble for mentioning climate change, and I found that really interesting because Florida is likely one of the first places that will be affected to their detriment in the near future. I mean, I know that already some tropical places, some places that are near the ocean, you know, are already seeing the effects of climate change.
Yes.
And one of those effects is rising water levels, rising sea levels. And this is something that already some states are having to take into account and combat. And so you'll find that some states that lie on the ocean or in the case of like Hawaii, they have acknowledgement at a state level of the effects of climate change and are doing whatever they can to combat it. But the problem is that there are interests that certainly don't want us to have a real conversation about climate change, because a tax on carbon emissions and these other regulations we would put into place could potentially negatively affect their bottom line and negatively affect their current business model. And so I think that it's probably going to come down to a concerted effort, and like Bernie talks about, a political revolution in getting people into government who accept climate change and who have concrete plans or the political will to go ahead and pursue plans to address climate change. And I wonder, you know, less as the effects of climate change become more and more real mm-hmm. every year, you see less and less resistance to it, yep. which is, it's the same thing with like...
Well, and the debate is changing, you know, like I right. said earlier. And,
right.
And people are really starting to realize that we need to deal with this. And this is, there are a couple things that I wanted to point out. And the first is, what's terrifying is the amount of ignorance in Washington. You know, we had a congressman bring a snowball in to a session, I believe it was a congressman, and he threw it, you know, to demonstrate that climate change isn't happening because he believed that somehow snow proved that climate change wasn't happening. And that's ridiculous that someone would yes. do that. And that shows the amount of ignorance that he has that he would believe something like that. And then there's also another politician that said, you know, well, the sea levels aren't going to rise because when I have an ice in my cup of water, you know, when the ice melts, you know, the water doesn't overflow. So there's no way that it's, you know, and it's this kind of ignorance that shows that people just don't understand the issue. And we have people whose job it is to figure out what we're going to do as a nation about these issues, and they don't even understand basic scientific principles like how water on land can melt and end up in the ocean, and how that might affect water levels.
Yeah, and how glaciers, you know, that are frozen water out, yep. you know, out in the middle of the ocean can melt and therefore cause
exactly.
sea levels to rise.
Exactly.
And that's, but, you know, the problem is like, I think it's useless to try and change their minds.
Yep.
Instead, there has to be the
political reform.
Yeah, and people have to get out and specifically either shame these people or vote them out of office.
Well,
I mean,
honestly, we've seen shaming and it does not work.
Well,
shaming, these people have no shame.
Shaming outside, like for instance, if The Daily Show or someone mm-hmm. else outside who doesn't really have any real political sway over their district shames them, like, it might have some small effect, mm-hmm. like some of Jon Stewart's fans in the district might be swayed, but chances are those people are already, you
right.
know, on the side, you know, against that candidate. The thing that I think has to happen is there has to be true political threat for them to change mm-hmm. their behaviors, and I worry that those districts are probably in not very hotly contested, and if they are, it's a primary thing. Mm-hmm. And usually in those, just coming from Kansas, we know that, frankly, that mostly results in a more extreme candidate
right.
versus
and,
you know, more
yeah. and,
moderate candidate.
Yes, and the saying, the incumbent always wins, unfortunately, is usually true. Not
yeah.
always, and it can be combated, thank God, but, you know, it's an issue, you know, and just how people are not involved in politics is another huge issue. And I wanted to go back to, you mentioned, you know, that corporations may be scared of these climate bills because it affects their bottom line, but I would like to relate these corporations to some tech companies, right? Like, let's look at MySpace, for example. MySpace is pretty much gone. Well, they're gone because something new came along and everyone went there, and that new thing
yeah.
is Facebook. And so when, you know, industries are always adapting and changing, and one of those industries is energy.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, such as coal companies make ridiculous amounts of money selling or, you know, getting coal and turning it into energy, or, you know, nuclear power plants, or just very, you know, these different ways of non-renewable resources. And so one of the things that's happening is there's this change towards renewable resources, solar power, wind power, ocean current power, you know, very...
Hydrothermal, yeah.
Yeah,
things
hydrothermal,
like that.
Things like that, which are great. And the thing is, the industry is changing, but these corporations or, you know, these areas, you know, they have so much money and influence
that they're trying to stop it and they're trying to fight it. And the thing is, you know, eventually they're going to lose because it is going to adapt and it is going to change. But if you look at a company like Facebook, whether you like them or not, you know, what they've done is they went and bought Instagram. You know, they...
Right.
And Instagram is the next thing. You know, my sister is just going into high school. She's never signed up for Facebook. None of her friends are on Facebook or anything like that. And it's because they're all on Instagram, you know. And so Facebook has bought into the next thing. And so a much better, you know, model for a business is to adapt and grow and be a part of this next thing. Apple is another, you know, love or hate Apple, they're smart because when, I mean, they helped, I mean, however you see this, you know, they helped grow or build the smartphone market, you know, and that, you know, to some extent kind of cannibalized their computer line because people no longer, you know, with iPads, were in sales. That might not be a correct statistic.
I imagine tablet sales are pretty good, but that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, but you know, the market adapts and it changes, and you have to be willing to adapt to that change or you fall behind and get lost to the ages. And that's something that these corporations need to realize, is that they either need to adapt to the future or, you know, they're just going to die, you know, fighting it and pulling the rest of us down with them.
Yeah, and the thing that you talked about a little bit there that I think we could hammer home is that the energy market will change, and the energy market is changing. It'll be at the, like you said, it'll be a problem if these companies don't adapt, you know, because they're literally taking a finite resource right now, and profiting from it. But the problem is right there in the sentence. They're taking a finite resource and they're making money off of it. The only thing that can happen with a finite resource is that the price will go up and the amount that you have will go down. And that is frankly not a sustainable, you know, way to generate energy. And we already know that. And it's a problem that we aren't putting the resources that we should be into making the use of renewable energy both more efficient and more widely adopted. And it's happening, but it's going to take time, and it could take less time if you had the political will to continue to support these industries as they're, you know, they're not really in their baby stage anymore. They're more in, you know, this early adolescence kind of stage, and they are maturing really quickly, but you know, a nice, friendly political atmosphere would definitely help them continue to grow and become the norm.
If we spent 1/100th of what we spend on military spending in renewable resources, we would make leaps and bounds.
Yeah,
because
and we have a lot of energy subsidies for like oil companies and things like that. Yeah. I'd love to see a lot of those subsidies be redirected towards clean energy companies.
Yeah.
And probably people out there will argue that, maybe not people listening to this podcast, but there are people who would argue that there already are, you know, there already is money going to clean energy companies, but I would wager, without having the data in front of me, that there's a lot more money going to oil companies and subsidies than there are going to clean energy companies.
And the arguments are, you know, these oil companies create jobs and these, you know, whatever. Well, I mean, you know, look at these jobs, you know, coal miners, that's a horrendous job, and it's, you know, it's a notorious job. And so, you know, if we can transfer these jobs over to jobs relating to renewable resources, like building wind turbines, transferring and changing how we produce energy is not going to kill jobs. It might kill specific jobs, but it will open up new jobs.
Well, I lived in a town in Missouri for a while, and it was featured on the news a few times for being the first town powered 100% by wind energy, I believe. I don't know how true that statement is, but I do know that that's what their like thing was. That's what they loved to tell people and everything. And so it brought, I mean, just talking to people who worked on the wind turbines and everything, like, they were making decent money and they had constant work, you know. Right. I think you're right in that there will be jobs to replace lost jobs in the existing fields.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is politically, you know, if you come out against coal, we can, because we're sitting here,
right,
you know, and we're not running for office at the moment. But but if, you know, it's political suicide in some of these states to come out against completely, right, against coal.
Well, and it's because you're going against, you know, entire towns' way of life.
Yeah,
and I understand that, and it would feel like an attack on their way of life. But you're living in the wrong era.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not attacking individuals or towns or anything like that. But it's, again, you need to adapt in order to grow.
Yeah.
And you need, times are changing, and you also have to adapt because there's nothing you can do about it. And fighting change is not going to get you anywhere but make you look bad.
Yeah, it's definitely a bad, it's a fight you won't win.
Right.
We know that. Everybody listening to this knows that on some level. You know, even if you are at completely 100%, in the oil and coal industry, and you make all of your money off of that, you know deep down that, I mean, you have to know that, right, it's going to come to an end.
Well, and the thing is, you know, I read an article and saw some statistics that said that if we wanted to, we could run the entire country off of renewable resources right now. We have the ability to do so. Now, it wouldn't be, you know, maybe quite as cost effective at the moment, but as soon as we start investing in it, you know, we will make those, you know, those advancements in the technology and,
right,
things like that, because, you know, you have to invest in things in order for it to advance. But we could run, you know, the entire United States off of renewable resources and we would be fine. And so, you know, when people say that, oh, we couldn't, or, oh, that's going to throw us into the dark ages, or, you know, ridiculous statements like that, it's just not true.
Yeah. And this comes back to another core thing on Bernie's platform, which is getting big money out of politics, because, mm-hmm, of course, part of the reason we haven't poured as much money into renewable resources is because we have people, contributors to political campaigns, like the Koch brothers, who have billions of dollars from the oil industry. It's kind of one of these things where it's like, when you hear it, you're like, of course.
Right. And I'd like to point out that the Koch brothers kind of own our state right now. I mean, that's a bit of an exaggeration. I know that that is. But at the same
time,
well,
debatable. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if it's truly an exaggeration, but go ahead.
To some extent. Anyways, you know, let's look at what big money has done to our state. Big money It bought Sam Brownback's campaign, and look at where it's got us. We've lowered taxes on the rich. Taxes for the rest of us have actually risen, even though he promised to lower taxes.
Yeah, that's right. Through sales taxes.
He lowered it for rich people, but not for, you know, the average everyday citizen. And look at where our state is. Our job growth is nowhere. We are doing terribly. We're in debt. We're the laughingstock of the nation. At least it feels that way, you know, because our state is doing terribly. And so look at where big money is getting us. It is, you know, people like this idea of, and it goes along with trickle-down economics, of, look at these rich people, they're helping us because they're giving us jobs. They're not helping you, they're helping themselves.
Yeah.
If they give you a job in the process, eh, good for you. But they don't care about you. You need,
yeah,
to stop pretending that they do just because they give you a job and a livelihood, maybe. You know, they are, everyone does things in their own best interest, and you are not what's in their own best interest. And so, you know, at least in our state, big money, you know, it only helped them and other super rich people, you know, and so it's getting the middle, you know, the middle class is shrinking, as we know. And so it's gotten the middle class nowhere. It's hurting poor people. And so big money is, you know, this illusion is starting to fall apart that big money has anyone's best interest except their own.
Yeah.
And that's one of the wonderful things about Bernie's campaign, is that, you know, he's not just going to do whatever people say, and he is going to do what he believes is right. And that's something new, and that's awesome.
Yeah, and I would like to also just to expand on that. Kansas was the conservative Tea Party libertarian experiment. That's what it was.
Yes.
And that was what Brownback ran on, you know. Mm-hmm. He won't say the word experiment, but that was
not anymore.
Yeah, but
because
for a while,
the experiment failed.
Yeah. But for a while, you know, he ran on this experiment and he was going to, you know, lower taxes. And there's a caveat there that they love to say that they lowered taxes. What they really did was abolish tax on certain types of businesses. And that ended up resulting in a major deficit that we ended up having to fill. We didn't fill it. It's not filled, but in order to try and fill it, we've cut funding to schools. We've pulled money from places that really we shouldn't have. They were funds of other organizations that were solvent and going and doing well. And this is the libertarian experiment playing out in Kansas. If you really want to learn more about this, I would recommend, you know, the Daily Coast has some good writing on what's going on in Kansas. And also we have a podcast called Free the State that you can check out, freethestate.com. And we've got some podcasts detailing that change in our own state, and we're getting ready to revamp that show and push even more content into it. Mm-hmm. But the idea behind all of this is that this comes back to, it all ties together. And Bernie's right to talk about these issues because they all are connected. The climate thing, would we be taking more effective steps on climate change if big money wasn't dictating how politics was done in Washington?
I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and all you have to do is you know, that show me the money, you know, the back to, okay, you know, these big oil companies and the people behind them. And when we talk, there's this idea that we shouldn't demonize people. Perhaps we shouldn't demonize people, but frankly, I'm going to demonize them because what they're doing is acting in their self-interest with no regard for others. Or maybe they're so convinced they've been pushing this bullshit for so long that they're so convinced that they're correct.
Well, and the thing is, they really do believe that their economic strategy will work. At least I'm sure. I believe that some of them do. I really do.
I agree with that.
And you know, like this idea of trickle-down economics. And a lot of these ideas look good on paper, but don't work in practice. For example, I was, you know, I got into an argument with someone over the minimum wage issue, and they were like, well, if you raise minimum wage, it's just going to raise prices for everything. And I'm like, yeah, but real economies aren't that simple. Because what happens is, when you put more money into the people's pockets who are making minimum wage, they spend that money. Guess where that money goes when they spend it? Back into the economy. Yeah. And so it acts as almost like a stimulus, and it helps the economy grow, and it actually helps grow economies. There was one study, and I can't think of the exact name of it, but there were these two guys, and there were two states, and on the one side they kept the minimum wage, and on the other side they raised the minimum wage. And on the side where they raised the minimum wage, there were actually more bars and more businesses growing and doing better than on the other side. And the reason is, when you pay people a higher minimum wage, they will go and spend money in those stores that then pay people a living wage. Yeah. So it's actually, so like if you're a business owner, you might think, oh no, I have to pay these employees $15 an hour now, but right now I only make so much money a month, so I can't afford to pay them. But what you don't realize is, you're going to have so much more income because more people will be buying your products, because more people will be able to afford to buy your products, because the people who are buying your products will be being paid a living wage.
Yeah, I would like to drill down into that a little bit more, because I can tell you that the first thing you have to think of when you talk about these lowering taxes on the rich in order to stimulate job growth is, if you look at it strictly from not a job creation, not an investment side of things, which we can talk about, but if you look at it from a spending point of view, how many cars is this one family, this one rich family, going to buy? Right. I mean, best case scenario, they bought, they're like car enthusiasts and they buy like 10 cars, you know, for right. two driving individuals in the home. Maybe three because the son is like 16 years old or whatever.
Right.
But that's still like three cars, you know.
Right.
That's not the same as a family that gets a raise. You know, somebody's making $15 an hour, they can afford, even if it's a crappy car, they can afford to buy a car,
mm-hmm.
and then they can get, you know, they don't have to rely on public transportation. They're spending money through paying for gas. They're spending money through, you know, buying things for their car. There's,
yep.
you know, instantly right there, there's a new consumer in the in that part of the marketplace that wasn't there before. The more these families make in the lower brackets, they're going to be injecting that back into the economy
right.
more so than the rich family on their own spending, because frankly, they only need a 24 pack of toilet rolls, you know, whereas it, you know, if that same money, if was split among a bunch of families, you know, that would have resulted yep. in a lot more toilet rolls, therefore a lot more money
right.
in the economy.
And what a lot of these super wealthy individuals don't understand is that if they have businesses, their businesses will do better, assuming your business isn't like selling helicopters.
Yeah.
You know, your business, if you sell toilet paper, for example, especially like high-end toilet paper, because that is a thing, which astounds me, you know, but it... you will sell so much more things. You will be better off in the long run if you pay people a living wage. Like, you can take the difference between Costco and Sam's Club, for example. Sam's Club pays their people minimum wage. They get, you know, crap benefits. And whereas Costco pays their people, I think on average, like $10 to $15 an hour, which is much better, and they give their people better healthcare plans. And in this article, basically what they said was they laid out the numbers, and what a lot of companies don't realize is that there's a cost to a turnover, right? When you have to hire a new employee, it costs so much money to teach them how to run the
yeah.
job, and you're paying them while you teach them and all these things, and that costs money. And so what happens is, Sam's Club employees will, you know, they don't stay around very long because, you know, it's not a good job. You're not getting paid well. It's not a nice environment because no one wants to be there. And so, but in Costco, people will stay there a long time. And so Costco actually saves money in the long run because they pay their people a decent wage and they want to continue working there. And the other thing is productivity. If you pay someone a crap wage and they don't want to be there, they're not going to give a crap how well they do their job.
Yeah.
They're just going to kind of do their job. Whereas if you pay someone a living wage and you're giving them good benefits and they're not worrying about, you know, am I going to be able to eat tonight? Am I going to be able to make this rent? You know, there are tons of studies about stress. You know, if you're stressed out about money, you're not going to do a good job in work. But if you're not worrying about money so much, then you can focus on the job and you can do a better job.
Yeah.
And that's why businesses that pay their people a living wage do better.
Yeah. And frankly, you know, there are places you can go and you can follow up on this. You can do your reading.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to maybe put this in the show notes at some point. Maybe
I can find the article.
Links, yeah, that talk about specifically that. The other thing is investment, and people say like, well, that's not really what we're talking about. You know, the other side will say, we're talking about investing in new companies, investing in starting new companies and growing these new enterprises that employ people. And my problem with that is that, frankly, I don't believe that there's this master class of people who are coming up with great ideas constantly
yeah.
and forming new companies.
Yep.
Like, oh, these really rich people, they come up with all these different new companies and they just spin out of their head and they start them up and they have time to
oh, yes.
get them going and everything.
Steve Jobs, he started out as some rich billionaire, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And Bill Gates.
Yeah, the problem lies in that, frankly, I don't know that you necessarily, like, there are companies that spin out of existing, like, millionaires and billionaires mm-hmm. companies. That happens. And there are large companies that also spin up, you know, smaller companies and that sort of thing. However, I don't know that necessarily cutting taxes on people who make a lot of money results in more companies spinning out of that.
Actually, it's the opposite. Yeah. And here's why. When you tax big corporations, you're taxing the money that they have in the bank. So, like, a company like Apple has ridiculous amounts of money in the bank. And so if you're not taxing that money, then they have no incentive to use it. And so they're just going to keep it in the bank because it doesn't matter, because it's not going to be taken from them. If you were to raise taxes on corporations and wealthy people, what ends up happening is they will invest that money in new businesses. Because what happens is, let's say you're a billionaire investor, right? If the government is not going to tax you, you're just going to hold on to your money. But the government is saying, you know, I'm going to take half of your money every year. What you're going to do is you're going to take that $1 billion and you're going to invest it in all of these companies, because the government can't tax your investments into corporations or into small companies, into small businesses or whatever. Right. And you know that you're going to, at least for some of those businesses, see a return on investment. Yeah. And if that return on investment is high, then you're making more money. And so what happens is, when you tax corporations and wealthy people, it actually stimulates the economy more, because then they have an incentive to invest that money in new companies. So when you don't tax them, what you're saying is, hey, please invest in companies for us. We're doing something nice for you, which there's no way they're going to. I mean, not that they won't, but that's asking them to do that is not an incentive. Right. But taxing them and threatening, hey, we're going to take your money if you don't invest it, we'll have them invest it, which stimulates the economy incredibly. It stimulates economic growth. It stimulates, you know, new ideas. It brings about new things, and it helps, you know, grow the job market. And it also helps, what's the word I'm looking for? New ideas and innovation. It helps innovation and helps promote innovation.
Yeah, and that's what, and I wanted to talk briefly about, there are, and this is going to sound silly because it's just like a common sense thing, but there are those among us, us plebeians, us peasants, who have great ideas too. The problem being is that if you're worried about, you know, clocking in to your job in order to make ends meet, you don't have the time nor the resources to pursue, you know, ideas outside of that. I can talk anecdotally about this from my own experience, is that when you, you know, recently, I stopped working at my my 9 to 5. It's truly an 8 to 5. I don't like that they say 9 to 5, because you most people don't work a 9 to 5. They work an 8 to 5. You know, or actually, most people work even more ridiculous hours than that.
I work 9 to 6.
But the thing that bothers me is, there are plenty of people, and you talk to them every day, who have great ideas, but they have no way of seeing those ideas out to their end, because they're too busy trying to run the rat race. They don't have any savings. They don't have, I mean, the normal person pays their bills, and then they have a little bit of money left over in order to buy groceries and make it to the next paycheck. And the problem is that person isn't going to be, I don't like to necessarily use this word, because I think it is kind of a wage slave, you know, because they don't have the ability to make these decisions, like, about their life that would
maybe... don't have the flexibility.
They don't have the flexibility. That's great. That's a great word for it, because they need that job. Mm-hmm. And the worst part of that is that they'll do things that they don't want to do. They'll do things that they'll make sacrifices that they really don't want to make, because they're so dependent on that job.
Right.
And that in itself is something that Bernie Sanders alludes to in a lot of his talks, you know, about, like, these people who work so often they miss out on, you know, that's his family values thing that he's been talking about, because Republicans claim to be the party of family values, but family values are being able to spend time with your family.
Right. Well, and their definition of family values is pray away the gay. Go to church together and stop gay people, you know? And I mean, I'm trivializing it, but But that is mostly, those are the kinds of things that they talk about when they say family values. And the thing is, those don't really have anything to do with family. That's just your personal bigotry, right? You know, I completely agree that an actual family value would be able to be like spending time with your kids or getting to do things as a family, like going to eat out as a family.
Or like going on vacation. Like, how many people have you talked to who don't? Definitely. Like, I honestly, like, my family didn't go on vacation very often for a very long time. It was only after, you know, let me think about this. We went on vacation maybe a couple times as I was growing up. And then after I graduated, we went on vacation. And vacation is a weird word because vacation could be just like a day, you know, going right. down to like the local theme park, you know, down in Kansas right. City, which would have been like an hour or two drive. And the problem is I know too many people who never have gone on vacation. Like they don't even, their parents never had time. Now they never have time. Right. And it's just not even a thing. Like vacation is a lot of people who are in a different economic, you know, place, like the upper middle class and the right. and the upper class. They when I talk to them specifically, like some of my friends who I consider to be like in the upper class, you know, mm-hmm. both parents make six figures, you know, and it's like it seems like their assumption is that everybody goes on vacation. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that I have a couple friends who their families never made over like 30 grand. Like their household income was right. never over 30 grand. You know, some people are like 30 grand's a lot. It's not at all a lot. Right. Like there's especially when that's your household income, you know, like it might be okay, which I would even challenge that it's okay for one person to make that much.
Right.
But the problem is that when you make that collectively, like that doesn't leave very much room for
right. Well, there's this idea of getting by, right?
Yeah.
You know, as long as you're making enough money to get by, you're in good shape, right? Well, part of life is quality of life, right? You know, the pursuit of happiness, you know,
yeah.
what happened to that? Like, you know, a lot of people say, you know, as long as you get to eat every day, you're fine and we don't need to worry about you anymore. And you know, it's sad that that's where we're at.
Yeah.
That it's like, if you get to eat a meal every day, then you don't get to complain. Like, that's depressing. Everyone
yeah.
should have that taken care of. And what we should be trying to do is make it so that people can enjoy life and go on vacations
yeah.
and do things like this. Because the other thing is, if you go on vacations, it's easier to have a better world view. Or,
yeah.
you know, and to have these experiences can have a big impact on people.
It's kind of sad because it's like, conservatives... And I hate to use that word, but because I don't even think they're conservatives anymore. Like the part of the Republican Party that has grabbed them and run them down in this race to the bottom
mm-hmm.
is like,
I like that.
Is not conservative. I don't know what they are. Like maybe radical, like right wing radical, like almost, I don't know the best word that I'd like to use for this.
Well, it's borderline fascism.
Because
yeah, I'm just going to go out
and say it. I didn't
want to
say it.
I know
yeah.
you don't want to say it, but the fact is that's what it is by definition. Because what they're doing is, if you look at their strategy, is corporations say, well, this is what we need to make money. And they say, okay, that's what we're going to make happen. And that is the definition of fascism. And that's where we're going. I'm not saying that they are fascist the way that they are necessarily, but that is basically the way that is the direction that they're headed. That is where they are on the political spectrum. I mean, that is what's happening. And, you know, this attack on socialism, it's like, you know, people equate socialism to communism and all of that, but that's not a fair, you know,
comparison.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, there's this huge misjudgment of socialism where people think it's this terrible thing, but like, Do you like the fact that police will come and help you when you call them? Because that is a socialist idea. Do you like the fact that when it snows, a snowplow will clear the roads? Because that's a socialist idea. They used to be that you would have to get an emblem for a private fire department and put it on your door or on your house somewhere. And then if you had a fire, the firefighters would come. And if you had their emblem, they would come and put out your fire. If you didn't have their emblem, they would leave and let your house burn down.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that we have moved away from that. And that's because in not all cases, but in some cases, socialist ideas are really good ideas because I don't want my house to burn down because I didn't pay a private fire department.
And there's a funny scene in The Gangs of New York when two fire brigades show up from different competing, like, I don't know if you want to call them companies or whatever.
Right.
And then they fight each other because the one's trying to put out the fire and the other's like, haha, we're going to stop you from putting out that fire. And but fundamentally, there's this conservative block of the party that, to their own detriment, is driving it, you know, towards that end.
Right.
And
all of politics has kind of shifted along that spectrum because they're pulling all of politics to the right. And it almost seems like I had one political science teacher describe it as this is a backlash because of like the 1980s, you know, where there was more of a liberal swing, I guess would be the way to put it, you know, and where we were doing lots of good things. And so the corporations got scared and now we're moving, you know, more along the spectrum towards fascism.
Yeah. The problem is in, I would say, the problem is in the extremes, pretty consistently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to frame any, like, this democratic socialist idea as an extreme, because it's really not.
Mm-hmm.
It's having a government that performs, you know, these roles that I think it's good at.
Yeah.
And the problem is, there's not a good reason to have health be a profit-driven industry.
No.
Because it's one of those things, and other countries have realized this, that just doesn't really make sense. If your health as a human being, your well-being,
your quality of life,
yeah,
I mean,
is
it comes
tied
down to
a profit motive, then it's going to negatively affect your health. Because there are just way too many examples, and it wouldn't make me so upset if I didn't hear every week somebody saying, I haven't been to the doctor, it's too expensive. You know, like,
right.
If I didn't hear that so often, it wouldn't have such a, like, it wouldn't leave such a bad taste in my mouth. But the problem is that I hear it almost weekly when talking about, you know, somebody's got a weird, you know, sensation in their shoulder.
Right.
You know, they've got a weird growth on, you know, their neck,
right,
or whatever.
And,
like,
the thing is, you know, even things that seem minor, you know, I mean, not super minor, but some of these things need to be checked out by the doctor, and these things need to happen. The idea that, you know, you're literally profiting off of human lives, because when there is a profit in these corporations, you know, or in health, you know, that's money that is not being spent to help people who are sick, you know? And that's horrible. Any money that I pay to a health insurance company should go to helping someone who's sick, whether that's me, whether that's someone else, you know, it doesn't matter. But I don't want that money going to some rich guy's pockets, you know?
Yeah.
That's a messed up idea, that me paying for someone's health, whether it be my own or someone else's, would go so that someone could buy a Lamborghini.
The problem is, as long as there's a profit motive in insurance companies, in these health, like, these organizations, they need to be pulled away from that. They need to be, of course, it's the difference between privatized and public.
Well, here's an example. I don't know if you know much about it, but there's this thing called CanCare, which is the Kansas healthcare thing, and it used to be run by, I think, you know, the Kansas government or whatever, and it used to be nonprofit. And what happened was Brownback, one of the things that he did was he said, oh, it's better to privatize everything, so we're going to privatize CanCare. And he sold it to a corporation. And basically what happened was premiums went up. What people had to pay each month went up. The things that were covered just started disappearing. You know, what people had to pay in order to go see a doctor was going up. You know, I know someone who had CanCare, and they basically said that, you know, I used to be able to go to the doctor and afford it. Now I can't go to the doctor, and I can't do anything. I can no longer see the eye doctor. I mean, that's just an example. I don't know if that's exactly what happened. But basically, you know, privatizing these things, you know,
drives the quality down.
Yeah, and the idea that private companies can run things better is ridiculous. What they can do is they can run things cheaper. Yeah. And cheaper isn't always better. Yeah. And yes, you know, sometimes the government spends more than it should on things. Is there corruption in the government? Oh yeah, I'm sure there is. But it's not going to be as bad as all of the money siphoning upwards and then people not getting the help that they need.
So it's funny that we got to this point, because that really speaks to what I was talking about earlier, that all these issues are connected. Mm-hmm. And it's not very difficult to start one with one issue like climate, talk about income inequality, and then work your way to healthcare, because they're intrinsically all tied together.
Mm-hmm. And that is greed.
The thing that we have to acknowledge is that some people specifically talk about one issue, and you'll have family members who say, like, they agree with Bernie Sanders, or friends who say they agree with Bernie Sanders on one mm-hmm. issue. But the problem is that if you agree with them on one, but you disagree with them on another, sometimes that is an inconsistency
in logic.
That's right. Because if you're like, oh yeah, you know, I disagree on the climate change thing, but I do agree on the income inequality thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, some of the things that are addressed in this income inequality thing would pertain to climate change. For instance, you know, we already know from projections by independent studies, by really, really intelligent people who think about these things all the time, that climate change will adversely affect those in poverty at a lot greater rate than those who are, you know, wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. You know, like, if you're impoverished, you're going to live, you know, more likely in an area that is not, like, you don't have a choice necessarily where you live.
A basic thing is that, you know, that we called it global warming for some reason, you know, but it's climate change. But in a lot of places, you know, we're seeing extremes on the spectrum of, you know, really, really cold winters and really, really hot summers. Well, you know, if you're poor, you know, I have friends that can't afford an air conditioner, you know, and, you know, if anyone who's tried to go to sleep when it's really, really hot knows that it's awful. Or you know, or just being in really, really hot weather. Like, I know I have friends that will go and buy a coffee in the coffee shop even though they can't afford it, so that they can sit and work on stuff in air conditioning. You know, and that, you know, speaks to both climate change and income inequality.
That's right.
Because it's both issues. And, you know, and that's just an example of how it's affecting people.
Yeah, and that's a great example. And I think that we don't, we have, they won't tie two things together,
mm-hmm.
extreme weather with climate change. The two are linked. I know people who will not acknowledge these things together. They will comment on, isn't it crazy that there's this terrible, you know, Superstorm Sandy or whatever.
Right.
But then you're like, yeah, it's probably the result of climate change. And I'm like, no, that doesn't make any sense. And it's like, well,
climate
actually,
relating to climate change?
Yeah, it's
what
like,
is this?
Actually, it kind of does make a lot of sense, you know. And so it's probably a good thing for us when we encounter that kind of logic to call it out. You don't have to necessarily be mean about it, but I think that just saying, like, you know, that point is kind of ridiculous.
Right.
You know, like, and the, and that goes back to my rant about, you know, calling out ridiculous when you see it.
Yes.
But what I guess this conversation that we're having today really just speaks to the platform that Bernie is a champion of right now. This his platform is originally 12 points, and I really wish I know Reddit created his 12 points on the little like sheet that you could send around, a little meme, and I really liked that because it was really succinct and it was clear on where and he stood on everything. Concise, yeah. That's no longer on the Bernie website. It's been condensed, and I wish that they would bring it back, or I'll have to get in touch with Aiden, who was on the second episode when I talked to him. He's the guy, one of the guys behind the Reddit, the subreddit, Sanders for President, and see if I can track that down and post that on the website for people to download. But I think that it's... All of these issues are related, and maybe that's what we call the episode, like,
right. You know? All of these things are like each other.
Yeah. but what we should be focusing on when we talk to people maybe is how they tie together. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe make the point that they do tie together, and that if you uncouple them, you really have some issues, because you're maybe not being consistent ideologically. And the problem I see with that is if you address one of these things and you don't address the other, then the first thing isn't really going to probably be as big of a change as you want. It's not going to make the difference that you want it to make. And, you know, we could go on and on and on about prison reform and about,
prison,
you know,
reform.
The Black Lives Matter movement, yep, and about racial inequality. All of these things are connected, and you can't necessarily address one and not address the other.
Right.
And I think that's what we've been doing for way too long, is we consistently try to address one of these issues and it doesn't have the effect that we want. And a lot of people get become politically inactive because they're like, it doesn't make a difference. Well, the problem is if you try to address prison reform, but you don't address money in politics, then it's
going to be very difficult to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things that I just realized is that you can tie nearly everything on the Republican platform to either greed or fear.
Yeah.
If you think about it, I mean, you know, their stance on, you know, on taxes, that goes to greed. You know, their stance on gay marriage, that goes to fear. You know, nearly everything you can tie back to either greed or fear. Those are kind of the things that link all of the issues in
politics.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be GOP, it should be GOF, greed or fear. That is a thing that I have thought about quite a bit,
mm-hmm,
because, you know, let's talk about the wars we went to.
Yep.
You know, it's...
greed or fear.
Yeah. It's,
or both.
It starts out... Yeah, exactly. It's fear, you know, which eventually also plays into greed. Halliburton.
Yep.
Cough, cough. Halliburton. But the problem is that if we don't address these issues all together, then we may as well not address them at all. Because, and that may seem extreme, but if we don't get big money out of politics, we're not going to be able to fix
prison reform.
That's a perfect one.
It's never
going to
happen. Yeah.
There's money in that.
They're so tied together. And the same goes for climate change.
That's
if we don't fix money in politics, we're not going to be able to fix climate change.
That's right.
Maybe it all just goes back to money and politics.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, to some extent, it does.
Yeah, and that's the problem that... But it's not a problem that can't be overcome.
Right.
It's, it the the real problem at the end of the day is there are a ton of people out there who aren't voting, who don't have their voices heard.
Yes.
And I do I blame them? Yes and no. I do think that it's stupid when they're like, I'm fighting the system by not voting. And it's like, no, you're submitting to the system. Yes. That's exactly what you're doing. We have a system in place where you can make your opinion known. And,
And the thing is, you know, I don't blame you for feeling discouraged or for feeling overwhelmed, because getting into politics is incredibly overwhelming. There's a lot of information out there, and more than half of it is false.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and there's just so much, and it's also, you know, the people who are involved are so, you know, I guess I'll just say passionate. I mean, I'm very passionate, and I overwhelm people when I try to talk to them about politics, because they're like, you know, I have a hard time not getting, you know,
riled up.
Exactly, because it's, you know, it's such a passionate thing. But the other thing is, you know, I do blame them for not voting, because, you know, I'll have friends complain to me, you know, like, oh, I wish I made more money. And I'll say, well, did you vote? And they said, well, no, because it doesn't matter. And I said, yes, exactly. Your opinion literally does not matter if you don't vote. If you want to get paid more money, vote for someone who is going to fight for what you want. Because if you don't, your opinion doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You are not allowed to complain about issues that you feel passionate about. And this goes for both sides. No matter what you believe, if you don't vote, your opinion doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, the voting turnout is so low. You know, a lot of people say, well, I don't vote because it doesn't matter. But if everyone who said that voted, they could sway the entire political argument. They could sway all of politics in whatever direction they wanted to take it, because they have that voting power, but they don't use it because they have become discouraged, which I understand why they become discouraged. But you have to vote, and you have to make your voice heard. Even if you don't become politically active, vote, because if you don't, you have submitted to the system, you have given up on making change, because you can't make change if you don't vote, and your opinion doesn't matter, and I won't listen to you complain if you don't vote.
Yeah, and I guess that's probably where we can leave it, because it segues into my next episode that I've already got planned out. And so we're sorry that we missed a week, but next week we will have an episode. I've been talking to someone who will be coming and having a conversation with us about voting and about how to vote in the primaries, how to participate in the primary in your state.
Sounds
and
great.
Then also one thing that I realized at the last Bernie rally that we had here in Lawrence not too long ago, it was actually a couple weeks ago, was that even though we've been listed on voteforbernie.org as a closed primary state, we're actually a caucus state.
Right.
And so essentially that means we're going to have to attend the caucus, you know, in our state, and we need to show up in force for other states that are out there.
Right.
Kansas is the only one I know right off the top of my head because I live in Kansas, but go to voteforbernie.org. It should have some information. The Bernie Sanders website does have information too. Go to the subreddit.
Get involved. Make a difference, because you can make a difference, because so few people actually do anything that you will make a difference.
Yeah. And so the thing we're going to do next week is we're going to have that conversation with our guest and talk about how to get involved and get active in your state and hopefully get out and support Bernie. The next thing that I wanted to talk about was, there is a new book that I wanted to plug, because we have that audibletrial.com.
Go to audible.com.
Audible trial.
Go to audibletrial.com/BernieCast to get a free Audible audiobook. I've been listening to Audible audiobooks for over a year now. There are tons of fantastic books, political, just for fun. I'm listening to Jurassic Park right now, because of the Jurassic World movie, which I enjoyed, but I'm not going to get into that. You can listen to that for free. You could listen to a political-related book for free.
Yeah.
Any kind of book that you want to listen to, or are interested in, go to audibletrial.com/BernieCast, and you can get one book for free, and you also are helping us out to make the content that we do.
And there is a book that I will plug. It's by Jimmy Carter. It's called A Full Life, Reflections at 90. He turned 90 recently, and he wrote a book talking about his life and, you know, I guess looking back on his accomplishments and thinking about what could have been done differently, what he did right. And so it'll be an interesting listen. I got the book, but I haven't started listening to it yet. So I would just recommend that if you are a political junkie and you want to, you know, have a nice listen on your commute or, you know, at your desk, if you can listen at your desk at work, you know, pick up this book. It's A Full Life, Reflections at 90, and you can get that at audibletrial.com/BernieCast. The other thing that you can do to support us, and we have 7 supporters now, that's awesome. I'd love to get up to 10, is you can go to BernieCast.com, hit the donate link, and it'll take you to our Patreon page. And for those who back us, you can get, if you back us at $5, you get access to additional content that we're actually going to be recording right after this show.
Yep.
And it's
going to be awesome, and you're going to miss out on it if you don't help us out on Patreon.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You'll miss out on some awesome extra content.
I'm great at shameless self-promotion.
We have some stuff in the pipeline that we'd like to do, some awesome videos that are just really informative and kind of this short, you know,
form factor. We've got a plan for new content that will be unveiled shortly, but we need your help to make it happen because we just don't have the resources at the moment to make this happen on our own.
It's very difficult, you know, between like, now I do a lot of contract work now, and so that means time is literally money, you know, and so I absolutely love doing this, but it makes it so much easier when there's money to at least pay to make sure our equipment is working and everything that it makes it so much easier for me to dedicate that time because it's not money that I'm paying out, you know, to replace this or replace that. And so far,
we've had content.
Yeah, that's right. And host content.
And websites. Websites, you know, are not cheap, unfortunately.
No. And so that's coming from a tech guy. You know, I've hosted plenty of websites and that's my day job. But it's certainly every little bit helps. And so if you can spare it, you know, and you can. A pledge of $5, we'll try to make it worth your while. We'll provide content. And if you pledge at $15 an hour, which I know a lot of people can't do, but if you can, I will send you a BernieCast t-shirt in the mail.
Yes.
What I'm asking is that you, if you can spare any money to help support BernieCast, head over to BernieCast.com and hit the donate link. And get signed up and become a subscriber. The final thing I'd like to talk about is where you can find us throughout the week. We have the app at Bernie Podcast Twitter handle, so you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at Bernie Podcast, and you can also follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/BernieCast. I'm fairly certain that's correct. If that doesn't take you there, search BernieCast on Facebook. You'll find us. And we try to post awesome articles there throughout the week. The other thing that is going on that you really need to be aware of is our website, BernieCast.com. We've got Alex. He's an awesome writer. He's been writing articles over there that talk about how to get involved with the Bernie campaign, you know, talking about the different issues that we're kind of fighting to become even more viable than we currently are. Like, one of these things is we've been dismissed, Bernie's campaign has, in the media, and there's this like Clinton coronation thing happening where it's like Clinton's a de facto Democratic candidate. But if you go over to BernieCast.com. That's a long rant to get back to what I wanted to plug was BernieCast.com. Alex is going on a bit of a road trip, from what I understand. He's heading out. he's going to be going to different Bernie events.
Ah, that sounds exciting.
I don't know how far he's going. I he gave the impression that he's planning on going, you know, all over the place. And he's starting in New York, and I don't know where he's going next. But he's going to be writing about that on the website. So I don't know when we'll see the first article out of that, but I would stay tuned over the course of the next week to see what he writes and posts up there. I'm super excited for that. I already really enjoy the content he's put up there. He's an excellent writer. And so I think that anybody who listens to this podcast will absolutely enjoy that content as well. So go ahead and check that out when you get a chance. That's BernieCast.com. And if you want to personally follow me throughout the week, you can follow me at Ryan Lee Sipes. And where can they find you, Zach? Where would you like them to find you if you want them to find you?
You can't find me. I'm not good at social mediaing. I'm not that interested. I have a Twitter account.
You have a YouTube account?
I do have a YouTube account. Both of those just have more random things. Or actually, just go to my website, ZachSpears.com, and I've got all of my different social media stuff listed on there. And so if there's any particular medium that you would like to follow me, including the website Medium, then you can find that there, and I have links to all that stuff. So if you'd like to follow me, you can do that through my website, and then you can choose where to get stuff from me.
And the other thing that we almost forgot that's worth mentioning is our YouTube.
We have a YouTube channel now, as we've mentioned before, and we're just getting back into building content for it. Like we both said, you know, we've been very busy, and so we haven't had a chance to dedicate very much time. But we'd like to put exclusive content up there, just short videos, updates before podcasts come out, is something that I would really like to do, and then maybe just short segments of issues that Ryan and I, or just Ryan, find important, and then that we'd like to do just, you know, short little probably rants about it. And so, you know, go there, subscribe, and we should have content up there for you shortly.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, hopefully we'll have another episode ready for you next Tuesday. So stay tuned, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
Bernie Sanders 2016. Bernie Sanders 20.
No corporation money.
Bernie Sanders 2016.